Blog Talk Radio.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, weighs heavy on my mind, then I look at you, and the world's alright with me, oh, just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Locked into the Brown Eye Perspective with Tracy and Cliff.
Greetings, listening family. We are back for another live episode of the Brown Eye Perspective. I am your co-host, Cliff. I've got my amazing co-host, Uncle Lorenzo, with me.
My man, Cliff, what's up, brother? What's good?
Hey, man, I can't call it, man. Woo! It's Thursday, December 21st. I mean, you know what's right around the corner, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, you know, there are people all over the world excited about what's going down in just 4 days, but you know, while we're in the holiday cheer, we never miss an opportunity to educate and to help build stronger communities. So tonight's show, you know, it's important. It's very important. We figure we would piggyback off of the show we did 2 weeks ago. You know, this show, we're calling Responsibly Black, Building Strong Black Men After Life Behind the Wall. We're going to discuss some serious stuff tonight, but before we get into that, Uncle Lorenzo, tell me a little bit about what's been going on in your world since last we spoke.
Brother, the same old grinding in the streets, trying to make a difference, brother, trying to make a difference, setting up this show, doing a lot of community stuff. Man, and look, you know that the holiday is around the corner, so you know we had to take care of family, so being out and about doing the honeydew stuff, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I certainly understand where you're coming from there. I tell you what, Lorenzo, Pat Show, we're going to have some folks come on tonight. Listen, as unfortunate as it is, we've discussed the schools, the prisons pipeline. We've discussed disproportionate minority confinement. We know what the numbers look like as it relates to members of our community and incarceration. But tonight's show is important because tonight we want to remind people that there is hope. You know, decision-making lots of times lands us in certain situations. Sometimes, you know, unfortunate things and happenstance lands us in unfortunate situations. It's not the misstep, it's the recovery that's most important.
Absolutely.
And tonight's show, we're going to focus and have dialogue around how individuals who spent time behind that wall live effective lives and go on to help build and make stronger communities.
Well, that's critical, Cliff, because 95% of the people that go behind the wall get out and come back to the community, man. And I just believe, you and I talk about this a lot, that we've really as a nation failed those ladies and gentlemen who come out, that we have to do some reentry stuff. And I'm excited with some of the guests we have on tonight so we can really get down to some providing information, giving some young brothers hope. Or older brothers hope who believe because they have that record that they can't make a difference or they can't recover from it, because we have people who've been there, done that, and came out better on the other side. You know, so that's the thing. We must If we are to reclaim our communities and build strong communities, we can't forget about those men and women who spent time behind bars. We have to embrace them, bring them back in, get them back engaged with their families, wrap our arms around them, and make sure that employers understand the value of hiring and giving back and building stronger people. I was at Dell State, did a guest lecture at Delaware State a few weeks ago, and I told some of the seniors who are about to graduate and come into probation and parole and maybe corrections and police, if you're not in this business because you believe that people have the if you don't believe people have possibility to redeem themselves and grow and get better, you're in the wrong business. You're wasting your time. If you don't believe in redemption, you're wasting your time because you can't help people if you don't believe they're capable of getting their stuff together and coming and living a pro-social life.
Yeah, that goes without saying, Lorenzo. I think you hit on each and every one of the pillars. I mean, you know, this subject touches both of us. You know, it touches what we do vocationally. We never get into the specifics of what we do, but it's safe to say that we are knee and hands deep in the revitalization of our community and the realization of the amazing gifts and talents that some of our brothers that have been behind the wall have to offer. And tonight, you know, these brothers are going to come on here and they're going to talk about what they're doing, and we're going to talk about some of the things that drive, motivate, and push them. So, I mean, you're excited about tonight's slate?
Absolutely, man. Look, I told you a couple weeks ago at the last show, I'm really excited, man. Because this is critical information, man. We're at a crisis, Chris, situation in this country when it comes to incarceration and things that are going on with criminal justice reform. And we have to build, all of us have responsibility to push forward and build on everything we can do to make these things better.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like I said, I know, you know, it's a nationwide show, but for our Delaware family, you've heard me, Lorenzo, and Tracy discuss the fact that Delaware is about 14 months in on a major undertaking for criminal justice reform in this state. You know, they're doing criminal justice reform efforts in both the adult and juvenile system. So, you know, keep your eyes locked on those local newspapers. Keep your eyes locked on legislative halls, because that is where you are going to get all the vital and critical information. But, you know, Lorenzo, it's not about us. It's about the
Absolutely
talent
not.
You're bringing. And, you know, I'm looking at the switchboard, and I see a 240 number on this switchboard. I think that is our first guest, Eddie, tonight, Lorenzo. So if you would, tell us a little bit about Eddie, and then we're going to go ahead and we're going to bring Eddie in here to talk to us for a bit.
Eddie Ellis is a gentleman I got to know from D.C. Everyone know I work down in D.C. Eddie Ellis was just a kid in the streets when he was arrested and sentenced to 15 years in prison. And that was at a young age, 15 or 16. After his release, Eddie has been doing great things. He has a nonprofit now that he runs One by One, Inc., does a lot of stuff with at-risk youth, reentry, you name it. Eddie has some books with resources for ex-offenders. He's actually passionate, and he's pretty much dedicated the rest of his life to doing this work. So he's just not going to talk about it. He can, from firsthand knowledge, see, I can talk about it, but he's a guy who lived it. So family, welcome Mr. Eddie Ellis.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, Eddie, man.
Thank
you for joining us. I told you yesterday, we appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, and I appreciate you all and what you all are doing and putting this message out there.
So, Eddie, tell us a little bit about yourself, man, our listening family.
Okay,
I'm sorry, Eddie. Let me introduce you to my co-host, Cliff, meet Eddie, man. I talked about you so much yesterday. Just want to introduce you guys.
How you doing, Cliff?
Absolutely. Thank you, Eddie. I'm excited you're here, man. I'm excited to share your message with our listening family. So I'm not going to do no talking. Let's go ahead. Let's get in this interview. Let's let these our listening audience, let them get nourished from your message, brother.
I appreciate that time. Well, I was born and raised in Washington, D.C. And I actually went to jail when I was 16 years old. I was facing 75 years on a murder case. And in my situation, the guy that lost his life, he had a gun and I had a gun. And unfortunately, he lost his life. And it's something that I regret every day of my life. You know, no matter what took place, you know, I feel bad about what happened because he lost his life and his family members are hurt and his friends is hurt behind what took place. And I was actually sentenced to 22 years, and I did 15 years of the 22 years, and 10 years in solitary confinement throughout, you know, private prisons, Lawton, D.C., and the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And my last 6 years I did in the Supermax in Florence, Colorado, where they hold people like the Unabomber and people like that. And before coming home, I didn't really know what I was going to do with my life or how was I going to change my life because I was never in a situation before like that to have to change my life. And I didn't really know what to look at. And some of the examples that was around me in institutions were negative, but there was a lot of positive examples of guys doing what they got to do despite their circumstances to be better people, to educate themselves, to get more closer in their spiritual life. And that's what I wanted to do. And when I did that, you know, I started to change my life. You know, when I started to change my life around, I started to set responsibility for my actions, you know, which was one of the most important things to me because I couldn't recognize what I've done wrong because I was denying it. I was in denial. And when I, you know, came awakened, I awakened and said, you know, I got to admit that I've done wrong. You know, and I started admitting where I went wrong and things started to change in my mind, the way I started to see life, the way I started to see myself, and I started to mature as a person. And I was blessed to come home in 2006 and was under probation and parole for a few years in D.C. And when I came home, I was fortunate enough to be around some probationers that really cared about people getting off parole, and they really cared about the people that they were serving. And my probation officers, guys, and I'm going to say the whole team was like my probation officers. And they supported me from day one in my dreams, you know, in my goals and what I was trying to do with my life. And I say approximately 6 months after I came home, you know, I started talking to a lot of guys and ladies that was on parole and probation about being responsible. And we had to take responsibility for actions and do what we have to do while we on parole. And then I started doing groups with CSOSA. And then I did a training with newly recruited probation officers, which was a very funny situation for me, but it was a good situation because a lot of people were able to be honest about what they felt. And it was a good situation, you know, and most of the people that I did the training with, I still see them to this day. I still speak to a lot of them. They still speak to me. So I created my resource book in 2008 because I wanted to show people in the area that there was some information out here that we can come home to. And so I created that without ever using a computer in my life. You know, I got a computer. I spent money on a computer. And got the computer and started working on it. And my best friend helped me edit everything and put everything together. And the probation agencies in D.C. Purchased the books from me. I had social work organizations and different people purchasing the book. They're trying to get people the resources. And I became a part of a nonprofit law firm that's nationwide. I was on the board of directors of that. And I started just going out of town, being able to speak in different colleges and institutions about my life and how I changed my life. And I'm married now. You know, I have, you know, kids. So this is my 11th year home. And I created my organization, thank you, in 2009, my own organization, One by One, because I saw some organizations really getting money but not really helping people. And I, you know, my concern was really trying to help people get their life back on track and educate their family on how to support them while they're in the system and when they come home from the system.
Eddie, I'm sorry to cut you off, but one thing, Eddie, I don't want to get too far away from this. You said something really critical, Eddie, earlier. a lot of people think when they hit the streets, that's when they can change their life. You said you started when you were inside. You started making your mind up, getting your mind right, and all those things. A lot of young brothers, they say they're going to program in jail that when I hit the streets, I'm going to get it right. I'm glad you made that known, that that change started in you while you were in. I looked at one of your videos, and I think you were talking about when your mother told you to stay out of trouble when you were in, and you're like, change your places. He's like, how can I change my place if I'm incarcerated? You want to share that briefly?
I was actually in Ohio in a private prison, and there was so much going on. I was dealing with a lot of depression at times. And my mother told me, she said, Eddie, you need to, you know, separate yourself from people, you know, change your environment. And I'm like, Mom, what do you want me to do? Pack my stuff and just walk away? I can't do it. I'm locked up. And it wasn't 2 years later that I realized what my mom was really saying. You have to surround yourself with better people, despite of your situation, you know. And years went on, and that's what I started to do, that surround myself with people who were trying to grow in that situation and be better people.
Right. Thank you. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I thought that was really important and critical for our young offenders and young people in the system to understand that you're not going to walk out and things will change overnight. You had to start that process. It's a process.
Yes, and that process is important.
And right there, too, Eddie, selfishly, you know, I do work with a lot of juvenile offenders. So somewhere – There's a young kid who's out on the street right now, who's rolling with a group, or he may be rolling solo, and his actions haven't caught up to him yet, thinking he's invincible. If you could for a second, Eddie, not to take you back and revisit too much of what your experience was behind the wall. If you could, just for a second, speak to what it's like for a juvenile to be in a system designed for adults.
It's a hard place. It's a hard place because when I went to jail, I was a mama's boy, you know, and it's a hard place on your mind, on your body, on your spirit, and it's just so much happening within those institutions that is just too advanced for young people, you know, and unfortunately, you know, in D.C. jail, we were around adults at times. We did have influence from adults that were close to us, that was in the institution. And some of us listened to some of these stuff that was being said, and a lot of stuff wasn't good things, you know, and we took to these things like food take to our stomach when we're hungry. You know, because we were hungry young people looking for something, but we were being fed the wrong things. We were so vulnerable in ways, you know. And then the unfortunate part is when I went to juvenile block in 91, I can say the people that was in the block with me, I can say out of all of us, say if it's 20, at least 9 had mental health problems.
Wow.
So for us at that age to be able to make certain critical you know, choices, because of the mental health problems that some of us had, some people couldn't make the choice that they really wanted to make because psychologically their mind wasn't there anyway. And some of us made choices we knew were wrong, you know, but some of us didn't have that within our mind to say actually this was wrong because of the mental health condition they had since they were babies.
Right.
You know, and that's not making up any excuses for anyone. It's just
it's facts, brother.
Yeah, and I asked you that question because I think it's important not just for young people listening to what you just said there, but also for adults who are part of designing these systems that the correctional system is not designed for juveniles.
No.
It's not. And, you know, I don't care what people say about they've done everything that they can to make it a system that is juvenile friendly. It is not designed for juveniles.
Right.
It's just not. It's like taking a rock and throwing a rock up in the air and expecting just because it's up in the air that it should be able to fly like things that naturally belong in the air. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
And you know, people who have experienced it and people who work with it firsthand, they understand what I'm saying, but it's hard to get laymen and regular people to understand. There is no facility that is designed for a young person. There's no facility designed for a 15-year-old. In some places,
no.
They're going in as young as 13 years old. And this is something that in this country, and I'm on my soapbox here, in this country, in this industrialized nation, we cannot do that to young people. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know all the answers for what it takes to rehabilitate young people. But that and what we do in this country, this is not
it. It's not working.
Yeah, it's very contradicting at times. You think about it, you're saying that a child can't go to a strip club because of their age. They can't go buy liquor or cigarettes because of their age. But you're saying in the same breath that if these children make a choice, that you're going to punish them as an adult. And it's known fact through science that a person's brain, you know, is still maturing up to the age of 25.
Yep.
So that's the contradiction to me. You know, if we're saying that we're going to treat these children like children, but yet when they make a bad decision, we want to treat them as adults. I mean, if we're going to treat them as adults, well, let them go to the strip club. Let them go buy liquor. Let them go buy cigarettes. I'm not promoting that. But what I'm saying
is you point out the hypocrisy. You're putting out the hypocrisy of the what the laws are now. I think that's what you're doing.
Yes, and it's terrible. I mean, a juvenile, I mean, a child, they can't drive. You can't go to the DMV get a license. But when they do something, you say it's adult-like, but this is a child. And that's what I think is the hardest part, because when I look back and look at the things that happened to me, I mean, my mom took me to see a doctor when I was on the street because I was dealing with a lot of depression at the time. But when I was in the institutions, we didn't receive a lot of mental health help to really find out what was really going on with us in the inside. What made you do this? We never really got that question.
Well, what happened, Eddie, typically, and I say this all the time to my staff and to other people, typically treat the symptom. A drug addiction is a symptom of typically a trauma. We don't address the trauma, therefore we wonder why when people start using again or recidivate, well, what happened? Why don't you get it together? Because you never treated that stuff below the surface.
That's so true. I tell people that all the time. I feel personally if we can address a lot of mental health problems, the drugs will fall off. Because if a person is sane and doing right in the mind, they're not going to get addicted to drugs. You know, only
and
when
especially
I was,
without considering the circumstances, right?
That's right. That's right. And I don't think the mental health side of things is being addressed enough to help a person stay strong and stay away from the criminal justice system. You know, because if a person get depressed so much and they used to doing something when they get depressed and haven't learned a healthier way to address what's bothering them, they're going to normally go back to the things they used to do because it's more comfortable, even though it may not be the most healthy thing to do.
Right.
Right.
Eddie, question for you. What was the most difficult for your transition? What was the most difficult when you hit the streets in 06? What was that thing that you were apprehensive about that you found difficult to transition back to? I know you were gone 15 years, but what was that thing that you found most difficult?
It was a few things, but one thing I could say was really bonding with my family. Because I'm not that 16-year-old boy anymore. So a lot of them don't know how to respond to me, even though I got visits, I had phone calls, I had mail. But I'm home now, and it's totally different. You know, people didn't know how to receive me, some people in my family. So I think
right.
that was, and, you know, the technology was out of this world. When I left the, you know, cell phone, you know, the ones you could carry in your hands the size of a 5-pound barbell, you know, and
right.
the size of a, you know, the car battery cell phone. So when I came home, the technology, it was so crazy. I couldn't even hold a phone in my hand for the first, like, 24 hours because it was so small and it didn't feel right. You know, but the subway
right.
was a problem. You know, adjusting the crowds, adjusting to loud noise, people moving so fast. It was just so much. You know, that I had to get used to, you know, even shopping, even going by a box of cereal. What may seem small to the average person, But to me, it wasn't small to me because it was too many boxes of cereal.
And what it does, it adds to that stress, Eddie. When we talk about post-incarceration syndrome and all those people, I want our audience to understand and our listeners to understand, it's real.
Yes.
You're talking about these adjustments that you have to make. You're talking about someone, Eddie said earlier, who probably had mental health issues early on or post-traumatic stress disorder. I always get this analogy. People always say, why does 13-year-old carrying a gun? But if the 5-year-old saw his first physical assault, mother beating father or someone at 5, by 8 he saw his first serious assault in the street, by 10 he saw his first body, by 13 you wonder why he's carrying a gun. So if you take that post-traumatic stress disorder, put someone in prison, then you have the post-incarceration syndrome, and then put them out on the street after 15 years and go, here, figure it out. That's a different kind of stress that people don't understand, it's easier for some brothers to say, you know what, or sisters, I'm more comfortable behind the wall, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more comfortable. I mean, it's more comfortable. Just think about this. I always use analogies with, and I'm not trying to compare the career of a military person to somebody who broke the law. But think of somebody that been active in military that went to war. I'm not saying somebody in reserve. Somebody
right.
actively went to war. Iraq, come home. After these 2-3 terms, they come home. They're not the same person.
Absolutely
They're
not.
Not
I can attest
person.
To that.
Yeah. So how can they, and I tell people the same thing with a person going in jail that long. You're not the same person. A police officer that's been a police for 10, 15, 20 years, not up Georgetown, but in Southeast. That's a total
yep.
different police officer when they retire. Because 9 times out of 10, the police in Georgetown ain't wasn't around no shooting up Georgetown.
Right.
But the one in Southeast, it's a whole different mind frame. So when he or she retires, their mindset, they're going to need counseling to kind of debrief them on what they went through in their career. And
right.
that's why you see some military people come home and fall in different holes that they didn't have before they went to the military.
Yep, some of the people I served with, and I've been fortunate enough that I didn't have those issues, but some of the people, I can attest to what you're saying. And I guess a follow-up question with that is, knowing those issues of the mental health and the post-incarceration syndrome, what are some of the things that you feel that when we're talking about criminal justice reform, people throw this word around all the time,
mm-hmm.
but when they say criminal justice reform, what are some of those things that you believe would benefit offenders, ex-offenders, or offenders, or people that's incarcerated now to help them when they transition, that's not being offered now in most institutions? I know you said mental health counseling and trauma and all
yeah.
those things, but some other things also.
We need more education programs. We need more debriefing anger management type programs to help a person learn and recognize the anger that they dealt with. We need more programs to help people understand what's out here, pictures of what's in a Safeway, pictures of metro systems, pictures of buses.
Oh, to relieve some of the stress, the anxiety.
Yeah, I didn't know how to use a bus for like the first year or so, or the metro.
And that's critical in the city, guys, because if you need to get to work or appointments or probation, that's how most people get around in major urban cities.
That's right.
Public
that's
transit.
Right.
If you don't know how to use that, you're stuck.
You're stuck. My PO actually took me on the subway at the Union Station and showed me how to use the metro. So that's what helped me use the metro better, him, because I was afraid to tell people I didn't know how to use it. But I think it need to be more programs on helping people learn how to be more calm, more coping skill programs, more parenting programs, because a lot of the men and women that come home are parents. You know, more socializing programs to allow people to socialize so you won't come out here and feel like you just you got to hide away from and be a hermit.
Right.
You know, so that's what I think. I think we need programs that can deal with people's emotions and their feelings to get them going again in a healthy way. You know, because
see, sometimes that's what I'm glad in reading your I'm sorry, Eddie, go ahead.
Sometimes we lose those emotions along the way and don't know how to respond to things in a healthy way. But to keep those emotions going, keep them healthy, and allow us to talk about what hurt us, what makes us happy, what makes us sad in a healthy way, we can bring those things along with us when we come home.
Right. And that's what impressed me so much about your program, One by One. You do a lot of supervisory, the smart planner. You talk about people patient smart planner. You do a lot of, like I said, you did a release handbook to release some of that stress. You do a lot of groups. Those things weren't there for you, but I'm glad that we have programs now that people are starting to do. I just wish, and I think one of my biggest issues is I see people go to prison all the time, but they go to prison, there may be no programs in the prison, then they come home and they want probation to fix it in 18 months or 2 years.
Yeah, it's not gonna happen.
Especially all the other stressors.
And that's the thing that I learned, being able to go in the probation office, you know, see my probation officer supervising the team and talk to them and try to figure out things. And my thing was, I like to learn different things. So I wanted to learn from them, what is it that y'all do? You know, what's the stresses? And when I started seeing the stuff that they do, I'm like, wow, their caseload is out of this world. You know, the different personalities and people they have to deal with to help, to talk to make calls, the running foul and all this. I'm like, this is crazy. But I tell people this. What I did was I made my probation officer a part of my support team. And I told him,
absolutely,
I'm going to do what I got to do. I read the direction to the parole pamphlet and what I have to do. I'm going to do all that. What do you need me to do? And he was shocked. He said, Mr. Ellis, look, just do what you got to do, and I'm going to help you. And that's what he did. You know, but I tried to take the weight off his plate and make sure that I'm responsible for my parole conditions. So when I do come to him, it's something in a light way where he can say, you know what, yeah, I can do this right away. You know, but I tried to make sure that I was doing what I needed to do and being responsible while on parole and probation, and that's what I did. You know, but like you said, if they don't start to change before they come out, it's going to be very difficult for them to do it when they get out here because things move so fast.
And it moves fast, and then you'll find out people are still trying to program when they get out and trying to run game versus, okay, let's get this thing straight. By the time they understand that it's almost too late before they start doing crazy stuff again or doing something again, getting themselves back in the system.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's, and I tell people that, and you know what I learned from a lot of guys, because I can see certain things from being in the system and, you know, knowing some of the stuff. And I tell some of the guys, look, leave the fear alone, because the fear going to make you continue to lie. The fear going to make you continue to try to connive and do things, right? Leave the false pride to the side, because that false pride going to make you do the same thing. You got a lot of these guys afraid to say that I'm hurting, that I don't know. You know, and that's why when I try to do groups, I try to get into the emotional part of things and let them know it's okay. As men, we can have those things.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Eddie, because last week, Cliff, if you remember the last show, we talked, someone asked the question, how do we get recent our young brothers, because a lot of them are walking around with so much anger just on the street, just built up, pent up anger.
Yeah.
And someone asked, how do we reach it? And I see you have violence reduction workshops and all those things. What are some of the things you can give our listening family if they know someone in their family or a young man or their son or someone can go, what would I tell them or how could you dialogue with them?
What I tell
or direction
people,
they could take?
What I tell people is this. Normally when your tooth aches, something is wrong, right? Your tooth just don't ache just to ache. And that's what I tell about people walk around with all that anger. Something created all this anger. Something is wrong. And I actually had a conversation with a little guy where I live. I live in the suburbs. And I'm going to the store, and I'm in the store, and the little guy asked me what the F I'm looking at. And I said, brother, I'm just looking. I wasn't even paying attention to you. I come outside, the little brother had a knife in his hand.
Wow.
And, and I'm like, ho, what are you doing? You know? And fear didn't hit me. Anger hit me.
Right.
And I reflected back to when I was in the penitentiary, and I said, okay, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this knife from him.
Pray or
predator. Backing up. And I said, brother, something wrong with you, man. What's wrong? What, you need a hug? And this is what he tell me. And this, no disrespect. He said, I'm not gay. I said, it don't have nothing to do with you being gay. We are all people, and we love. We want to get a hug. We want to be embraced. I said, that's what I'm telling you. You need to be embraced, man. And he started crying. Tell me his mom put him out. because he disrespected his mom.
But
it was something that I realized that was wrong with him, because what you did was beyond what happened.
Right.
And I wanted to find out from him what's going on with you. And I think people, we need to sit down and have a conversation with them. Some of them you may not be to have a conversation with at times, but some of them, without feeling like they being judged too much, will sit down and talk to you. You know, because I went to the probation office when I was on parole. I talked to so many people that wouldn't talk to their probation officer.
Right.
I used to get calls saying, "Eddie, look, this person saying they want to go back to jail. Can you come and talk to them?" I'd be way out in Maryland. I'd come back to the city and sit down and talk to them. "Hey, man, what's going on? Or, young lady, what's going on? I don't want to be on parole. I want to go to jail. Why?" And I sit down and have a conversation. And when we finish, now they don't want to go to jail. You know, so I think it's talking to people.
You're talking about relationship building, and that's the thing that I think is missing from our community. You're talking relationship building. I think Cliff says this all the time. People who know each other and care about each other don't hurt each other.
Yes. That's so true.
Yeah.
That's so, and you hit that on the head. I got some guys I'm communicating with in jail now, and they're doing a program like that where they're learning more about each other and getting more invested into each other. You know, and it makes you care more about that person. So you right on the head.
Well, I tell you, Eddie, this dialogue and this conversation, you know, I don't want it to end here. Lorenzo and I are working on some things, and I hope and would love to be able to bring you in on some of those discussions that we have. We're putting together a forum. I'd love to be able to get you to sit down, because I got to tell you, man, I haven't said much tonight because you're hitting every point. You know, there were questions that I was going to ask, but you hit those questions, and it needs to be heard. And you could say it so much better and so much more clear and concise than I can. So I thank you for making my job easier tonight, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, it's an honor to be able to do this. Because for me, I take – you know, my responsibility in being a part of the community serious. And I know that it's a team thing, and that's the way I look at things. I mean, I've done so much wrong in the community when I was young, and I took away from the community. So for me, being able to give back to the community, you know, as much as I can and being able to help, I mean, that to me gives me life, you know, because my son, my two stepkids, you know, my stepson, my stepdaughter, the same thing. I want them to be able to walk around and feel comfortable. I want them to understand this is what I went through. You don't have to go through this. I made these wrong choices because I didn't talk to people. I didn't express what was hurting me. I didn't know how to express what was hurting me. Because when I was young, coming up, for a young male to express these certain type of feelings, it wasn't popular. So I didn't do it. And it hurt me. So so for me, this is very important to me, but, you know, I'm thankful that you all are doing what you're doing, because this message is very important, you know. So I just want y'all to know that this is very important, and I appreciate y'all allowing me to come on here and give my, you know, 2 cents.
Well, I appreciate you, Cliff. I'm going to tell you, yesterday when we reached out to him, my coworker and I, he said, "Well, when is it?" I told him what we're about, check our page out. He said, "Yeah, I'm with it. I'll do it. And that's the stuff I'm talking about. Guys, listening family, if you want to check out Mr. Eddie Ellis, he has a nonprofit, onebyone.org, onebyoneinc.org. You know, he has his list of programs. He have a box that you can donate if you want to be a part of the cause. But, Eddie, I'm telling you, you are doing good things, brother. You keep it up, man. I'm so happy for you and proud of you, man.
Thank you. I really think
you got a powerful message to tell and to share that's going to really change some people's lives if they want to change, because it has to start with them like it started with you.
That's right. That's why I named my organization One by One, because it starts with you first.
Why is that?
Because it starts with you first. You the first person. So I started with me first. I made this organization up in my head in the RSC when I came home. When I came home.
RSC, guys, who are not in the D.C., it's called the Reentry and Sanctions Center. People can transition in there when they get out of prison. At RSC, they have a mental health treatment floor. They have a lot of other things. So that's what when he said RSC is like a step down from incarceration.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I created my resource book. Same thing in my mind. When I was there, I created my resource book there, and I came home and I followed through with it. You know, so
I'm in my office at home, Eddie, and I got your resource book looking at me on my shelf right now.
Yeah, that's wild. But it's a blessing though. But I'm thankful. I was blessed to have probation officers in my life that I can tell you straight up that I love as people. You know, they're good people. They helped me out. Like I said, they supported me. You know, and they knew when I came to office, I'm gonna keep it 100 with them. I ain't coming in there, you know, shucking and jiving. I'm gonna keep it 100 about how I'm feeling, what I'm doing, and everything. And that's what they loved about me, you know. And to see them continue to grow in their profession, and me continue to grow. So a part of me came from learning from them as well. You know, they living their life right as men and women. They helping people. They doing this. So I took from what they do to try to learn other stuff I wanted to do, you know. So that's why I stay connected with the criminal justice system as much as I did when I done trainings with lawyers, probation officers, all these people, because of them.
Right. Maximize your resources. That's what I tell people all the time. That resource, if that's your probation officer, maximize those resources. If
that's
they
right.
sit there to help you, make them help you. Because they're
That's
good
right.
people. They're good correction officers. They're good probation officers. They're those people who really can make a difference. And that's another part of our show we're going to do tonight. We're going to talk to actually some former officers who can give us some insight into what are the things they can do to help. Even if it's not running group, it could be talking to a young man or woman one-on-one.
Yeah.
You know, because we assume that people know things because they're of age. But a lot of these people have never learned some of the basic stuff in life, and that's what led them to prison.
That's true.
Yep.
That's true.
So, Eddie, that's true. So, Eddie, there's one last thing we got for you, Eddie. When you come on this show, you officially become a part of our family. You know we call our audience our listening family. So when you come on this show, you're officially family. So now you're Cousin Eddie.
Okay, I appreciate
Cousin
it.
Eddie.
I appreciate it. I really appreciate it.
It's something we got to know, though, Cousin Eddie.
What's that?
What you bringing to the cookout? What you bringing to the cookout?
Well, I'm bringing to the cookout. I got some special bush beans I'm bringing to the cookout.
All right, now. We'll take them.
Hey, since you're from D.C., you're going to have to bring the Mambo sauce, too, now.
Okay, I can
bring
some Mambo sauce.
Bring that Mambo sauce. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, Eddie, appreciate
you,
brother. I'll be touching base with you, though, okay?
Okay, I appreciate y'all, and keep up the good work. Keep putting the message out there.
Okay, we're going to still be getting with you, too, because I said I want you involved in some other stuff that we're doing. I'll give you a heads up.
Okay, I look forward to it.
All right, brother, thank you.
Okay, peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Eddie Ellis Lorenzo. Wow.
I told you.
Wow.
Did I not tell you? The brother's doing some things, man.
Yes,
he didn't fall victim to the situation that he put himself in. He dusted himself off, and now he's giving back. Look, listening family, it's possible. Don't give up on yourself, and don't give up on those you love, because one day something you say is going to click, and they can get it.
Yes, sir.
And they're going to get it.
We're a little bit behind schedule, Lorenzo. We're going to have to pay these bills real quick. First thing we're going to do is pause for a station ID.
Let your voice be heard. Email us at thebrowneyedperspective@gmail.com or call us at 347-857-2213.
We want to remind everybody as we get into this week's Good Music Intermission that this week's Good Music Intermission is mixed by our friends at Good Music Incorporated. The one and only DJ B-Love prepared this mix for us.
Throwing it down all night, it's DJ B-Love.
Don't this hit make my people wanna jump? Don't this hit make my people wanna
jump?
Don't this hit make my people wanna
jump?
Don't this hit make my people wanna
jump?
wanna. Don't this hit make my people 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 wanna.
Act the fool. You better watch out. Hack be bringing the cops out. Come on, street soldiers is ringing the cops out. Short circuit and blacking the blocks out. Now open up the garage and pull the drops out. Rocking the fur coat, bringing the blue fox out. Diamond light up the block, bringing the blue rocks out. While until all of my crew knocks out. Come on, get your ass up on the floor. Throw your hands if you want some more. Baby, wiggle your child and peep the way we be blowing the spots out. Come on, look how we got them ready to act out. Girl, I'm ready to get the twist in your back.
Let's
out.
Go.
Come on,
drink yak till I'm falling out. Yeah,
flat on his back. Now watch your brother crawling out. Come on.
That buster.
What's up, son?
See them girl rolling. And it look like.
Come on.
They're just rolling.
Oh, yeah, I see I'm getting big
but
now.
But if your man baby sitting, then what you gonna say?
What we gonna tell him?
You gonna tell that brother?
That's a kibosh, yeah.
Check it out. Hit you with no delay into what you saying, yo. Silly with your ice, grilly with the dilly, yo. When I be on the mic, it's I do my duty, yo. While up in the club like we wild in the studio. You know when the violin, baby, really and truly, yo. My main thug, villain ain't Julio, he moody, yo. Type of rubber that'll slap you with the tulio, yo. Real shook, scared to death, act fruity, yo. X that, looking shorty, she a little cutie, yo. The way she shake it, make me wanna get all in the booty, yo. Top mistress of the banging pictures and videos. While I'm with my freak like we up in the freak shows. Hit you with the shit, make you feel it all in your toes. Hotch, got all my people in red clothes. Styling my metaphors when I formulate my flows. If you don't know, you're messing with lyrical player pros.
Do
like
you really
that.
Wanna party with me? Let me teach you what you got for me. Put all your hands with my eyes to see. Stay buck wildin' in the place to be. If you really wanna party with me, let me teach what you got for me. Put all your hands with my eyes to see.
Okay, remix.
See, now you know who the guard be. Back when in the city, and you know who the squad be. Flip move. Flip, see, ain't nothing changed. No, I'm back with the remix with the queens of the game.
When you see me in the spot, just you can better respect it. Y'all already know in my rep. Ain't no reason to check it. And y'all know that you with me just for the record. So instead, I'ma let Mary J. Blige come and set it.
Now get low, Mary.
Maybe you can guess who it is. Mary J. Blige, I'm about to handle my biz. I'm on my grown woman, still a rep for the kids in every hood. And all my people doing a bit.
Now
you know
who's
really the queen. Delivered the mail. 730,000 first week of my sale. The haters plot and they watch looking all pale. While I'm on a yacht overseas doing my nail.
Get low, Mary.
Well, let me show you how we do. I gotta thank everyone for copping the breakthrough. Bust did take one, the remix is take two. You love the way we reinvent and how we just stay new.
How we
selling
out the stadiums, arenas, and all. Only Louis and Gucci, we don't shop at the mall. Got your partying and dancing and having a ball. And you're loving the way we repping, how we do it for y'all. Go ahead.
To the bank where you deposit young money and you get cash money. I'm Tunchi the boss, and live from the vault is Bust a Bus.
Yeah. Y'all, swag mania, pop that goes most. Carry the most beautiful with us happily toast. Keep the faculty close, gross when we give them a dose. Got MOD and leaning in each coast. Scenery froze, take notes, rock boats, diamonds that fit us. Chanel mention the winner who fucking with us. We coming to give them the shivers. Water we flow, spilling like rivers. Flood in the street, hoping the swimmers moving gorillas. King Kong's Godzilla's when we roll up. Seat filling the get up when I show up.
Please don't throw up. Hold your liquor, girl, up. If you're robbing it, G's will show you how to blow up. Thank your lucky stars, it's the rap dog. Tuck your shit in. My new bite like a rent in. To my chagrin, you never win. Model thin, walking, cracking your shin. She gives in every time that I spin. Square up, bow down to the kings of the hall. We way gone, talk shit while we ball. So what's cracking with y'all?
Native New Yorker, the slick talker, keep shit in order. Call a reporter, stepping like British walkers. Legendary swag fluent, see the influence, see how we do it. Get them into it steadily, got them stupid, so undisputed. Act full, back tool, till they pop off. Police crowd up the street, blocking them off, locking them off. Got these while I signal my soldiers. Bossing it up, maintaining composure, stand on the sofa. 30 bottles, 20 waitresses, bring them over. See how we light up, call a promoter. Tell that, bring the bag, better hurry up with it and count the money up proper. Cause you can get it, you can get it, you can get it, you can get it.
Yeah, I feel good, don't it? I feel good, don't it?
Yo,
What up? B-Love did it again.
Yes, sir. Little bus for us. Get it popping.
They need that energy.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that was this week's Good Music Intermission. To book a Good Music DJ, they can be reached at area code 302-270-5642. That's area code 302-270-5642. Or you can find them on the World Wide Web at www.goodmusic.com. That's www.goodmusic.com. Thank you, DJ B Love. So, Zoe.
What up?
Mr. Ellis is killing it. Absolutely killing it. First half of the show. You know, we covered the perspective of, you know, what a young ex-offender might experience, you know, behind the wall. I thought he gave us 45 minutes of strong and meaningful dialogue. I think that there is, as you alluded to, as Mr. Ellis was stepping out, there's another meaningful aspect of incarceration and life behind the wall that we should explore. And we've got two former correctional officers ready to come in and further this discussion with us and further this dialogue. So, Lorenzo, without further ado, we're going to go ahead and bring James and Robert in right now. Can you hear us, James?
What's going on, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Okay, I'm doing pretty good. I've been listening at the what the other brother was saying. He touched on some really good subject matter on how guys are on the inside and the things that they think about, because I do interact with them. I mean, you're around them all the time. It would be a waste of time not to interact with people that you're working around, and it becomes a work environment. That's the work environment. And if you lose that perspective, it means your time there is going to be wasted and you feel worthless. So when you have something to give back, I feel anyway that because that's my mission, is to help them make a difference and not just be there to put a foot on their neck, so to speak. I mean, the incarceration is already done and the process has already started. The rehabilitation process has to also start.
Right, and see, and Eddie hit on that too. You see how important that his probation officer was to him, and I think that first line of start the modeling and all that actually starts with that correction officer relationship. Because some of these guys don't know how to be men. They come from the street with some baggage, and we assume they know, and we talk about rehabilitation, but sometimes they have to be taught the basic stuff that we already know. So. Is James on also? Cliff?
Yeah, I've got him punched up.
Okay, because he didn't answer. But the thing is, the question I have is, first thing I want to ask, the day-to-day, without getting into too much, the day-to-day of an inmate's life in the institution, what does it consist of typically? I know it's... I'm just being general.
Well, from my perspective, the building that I'm in now, I have guys going to education. I mean, from the morning time, they get up. And, I mean, this is me personally. I like to get them up and get them moving and about and give them a sense of some kind of reality to the world. I mean, get up. Don't just lay there and sleep all day if you got something to do. Got to prepare yourself. I mean, it's even going to simple things like doctor appointments or going to, you know, they go to visits and that kind of thing. But when they're doing things that are inside the prison where they're not trying to portray, when they go to the visit, they want to look their best and get a haircut the day before. But that's the persona that they're giving to the people outside. But on the inside of the walls, you still have to carry that same type. And when I see people doing that, I try to make them live up to that standard. You know, if you're a guy that get a haircut and you shave and take care of your hygiene all the time, or not just when you go to a visit, I make you do it all the time. I'll say to them, you know, don't you think it's time for a haircut? If you got access to it, you need to. those type of things. Look your best when you're going somewhere. Make no difference. If the state has paid for you to get false teeth, then put them in and wear them. It's just about giving them a sense of who they are and discovering themselves. Those ones that need rediscover, those are the right. middle-aged older gentlemen. But the younger guys are mainly followers. They are just looking mm-hmm. for something to follow, someone to follow to say, hey, I did this because my uncle did it. I did this because so-and-so did it. And they become followers in this incarceration thing. But I try to intervene and find out what makes them think about the things that they do and why they do it. And then as a correction officer, living up to the name correction, if it's wrong, correct it. Even their way of thinking. And I have had guys that have anger issues. They're mad because they can't control anything. They don't have any kind of control. They don't even control when they go to bed or when the lights are on or when they can use the telephone or when they can eat chow. Those
right.
kind of things are controlled by someone else. So they have to get into, I don't have no control. So they are looking for that one little thing that they can control. And the thing that they can control is the way they think. And I always tell them, if you change the way you think, it'll change the way you act, and it'll change your outcome, even on the simplest things. You know, when it's time to get off the phone, it's time to get off the phone now. It's not time for a little bit more time. And I always use this scenario to them. I said, if you go to the bank on the street, if you go to the bank closes at 3 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, the door is locked. They don't care how much money you got there. They don't care what you got going on. The bank is closed. There's no more transactions taking place. So I always use that when it's time to get off the phone. I said, the bank is closed. You got to get off of the phone and realize that you are governed by something, somewhere, sometime. And that's the things that they have to hold on to. And we have to feed it to them in order for them to get it, because if not, they get out with the same sense that they went in, and that, hey, this is the part of my life I control. Nobody tells me what to do. I do whatever I want to do. It's all wrong. So you wind
right,
right
and
back
I think it's
up.
Critical what you did. What you did, though, see, and I like the way you did that. What you did was you applied it to real life, some real life stuff. And they may not get it today. But like you just said, if the bank technology, well, if the bank is closed, it's closed. And it's not.
Right.
It's to the point where you're not saying, I said hang it up. You're actually giving them some life lessons. Yeah, you're getting what you want out of it, but they're also getting that life lesson. They'll start thinking about things like that. So though, when I talk to people and I say the role of a corrections officer, people keep saying guard. I personally find that as an insult, because I think correction officers do more than that, especially the good ones who are dialoguing with people who are modeling certain behavior and things of that nature. And that's what it sounds like you are doing, or trying to get them to think on the inside.
I mean, exactly.
And Lorenzo, I want to jump in there just for a second. Also on the line, we've got Lisa, a former correctional officer as well. Okay, she's joined us too, so I've got her punched up. Can you hear us, Lisa?
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
Yes, good evening, guys.
How you doing?
I can hear you.
Good.
I'm doing well.
Good. We wanted to make sure, you know, we also brought the perspective of a female correctional officer, and also I believe in the setting that you used to work, I believe you were able to work with offenders who actually had jobs within the facility. So we think that that's an important part of the conversation, an important aspect of this dialogue. So thank you for joining us, Lisa.
Thank you for having me on. You're 100% right. A lot of points that he made, were very valid. And as someone who worked in the kitchen capacity, I also was able to do a lot of dialoguing and putting things into the guys' heads that were not, that they weren't thinking about at the time. And being a female officer, they kind of gravitate towards me because I am a female, obviously. But I was able to impart a lot of good information towards them about, different things that they could become involved in when they do get out, because it's all about preparing them for the outside world. Most people don't have life. And I always give that to them. I always say, you don't have life here, so you got to prepare yourself for life beyond the walls. And I always try to, you know, provide tips for them. Whatever I come across, any type of information that I get, I always try to pass it on to the ones, especially the younger ones. Because the game is changing, the world is changing.
Right.
So I always try to make sure that I give them some information. Last year I joined SARJ, Southern Alliance for Racial Justice, and I found it to be interesting. And I was able to share that with the young men, you know, and I told them, think about that. Start getting involved in activities outside of the prison. You know, like get your family members to write in and get the information for you while you're here, to engage yourself in something positive while you're inside. Take your mind off the negative, but begin to prepare yourself for life once you get out.
See, and those conversations, like I was just telling Robert, those conversations are critical, because we never I know we can't forget it's prison, but any conversation you have with your children or anyone else, they start with those life lessons that hopefully one day they will get. You don't know when they'll get it. You don't know how they'll get it.
Exactly.
It could have been the 10th time you said it. But those things are extremely critical. James, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. What do you think about that? I mean, some of the things that you heard the other former CEOs say about the actual responsibility, or so what some of them do about dialogue and one-on-one, those life lessons has that been your experience also?
Yeah, that's been a lot of my experience also too. And, you know, a lot of the setting that I guess we're seeing now, all of us, you know, dealing corrections, we're seeing them come in so young. They're coming in so young. And like you said, you know, a lot of them come in, you know, think they know it all. But once that, you know, behind those walls and the doors locked, and now you got, you know, someone that's 20 years older than you, pretty much trying to tell you what to do, how to do, and when to do it. It's a big change. And I hear a lot of dialogue from, you know, from everybody, and which is wonderful, which is real wonderful. It's my first time calling in and stuff and listening to it. I've been meaning to get around to do it a little sooner, but, you know, I've been a little busy. But anyway, corrections, it's a lot of stuff that still needs to be done. And my biggest thing, you know, with a lot of the inmates that I deal with, you got to listen. I mean, you know, a lot of people do a lot of talking and stuff like that, but you got to, you know, pick and choose of different type of stuff and areas that can help you along your way, because we know we got a lot of them. They're not in there for life, and a lot of them probably going to get out sooner.
Right.
You know, than what they think. And then when that time comes up on them, you know, you need to be ready.
Right, because the statistics are showing that 95% of those incarcerated eventually get out of prison and hit the streets again. The question, I guess the concern of society is we have to try to find ways to send them out to society better than they were when they went in. You know, and that's some of the barriers that we run into in our communities. We have, James, you were saying that they're coming in younger and younger, and they get upset when people try to tell them what to do. And that, from that perspective, what happens is a lot of them don't have fathers in their home, and they're the man of the house, so to speak, so to have someone else tell them what to do. So they're trying to break those walls down, those barriers, and you can spend a long time doing that. But I think with persistence, we can do it. Not all, because you're not going to reach all. And I know you guys know that, having worked in the business. But just coming from where they're coming from, we assume because they're at the age of 20, they should know X, Y, and Z. But a lot of them never really had to do anything for themselves. They don't know how to balance a checkbook. They don't know how to deal with conflict resolution. Their whole social reality is, I'm going to fuss, fight, you disrespect me, and all those kind of things. So how do you guys, because we talked about earlier with Eddie, a lot of our young black men are walking around with anger issues. It seems like you look at them wrong. They're rolling their eyes. They're mean mugging. How do you guys deal with that on the inside of an institution when you try to work with them and tell them, hey, that's not the way to go? Any experiences
well,
from you guys that
– Okay. Well, the way I deal with it, I mean, a lot of times I can sense, especially when young guys, if they are angry about something or just angry just because. A lot of them are just angry just because they don't have any control, like I said. And I just recently had a young man that was – he was angry because when I talk – when he asked me for something, I wouldn't answer him. And I just never had any interaction with him. And then, but he was always, he was somebody that if you didn't give me what I want, I ain't got nothing to do with you. So when he talked to me, I was non-responsive to him. And I said, each individual is different. You got to figure out a way to get to him and to break him. And I broke him. I just stared at him, and I never broke this. I said, I want to see just how strong and angry you really are, so I'm going to test him. And I stared at him, and he broke down, and he got mad. So one day he was in the yard, and he just walked over to me and started talking and realized that I wasn't a threat to him, and he opened up, and he just started talking. And then I just, you know, I told him a joke, and he realized I had another side to me than just a uniform. And from that day to this day, every day I've seen, and I tell him, I said, I know you was raised in some type of home with some type of respect, somewhat. You get up in the morning, you're supposed to speak. You take your hat off at the table. It's certain things, if you was in the house and you didn't have a father, there were certain things you did to respect your mother. You know what I'm saying? And those are the kind of things that they have, so you have to grab them and make them accountable for them. So when I started talking to this young man, he blew me out of the water with how he thought about the world, and then I gave him real life. And from that point on, every day, he came to me with conversation about, and I told him, you need to get some positive things going in your life and not always negative, like the guest speaker you had before was saying. You got to surround yourself with positive people, even if it is correction officers. He makes it a point to speak to me every day now. He makes it a point to engage in with me with something, even if it's current events or anything. So he's hungry for that kind of stuff, so I give it to him. I feed him, and I let him see that, you know, there is another change of life. You just haven't got to that point yet. And this is just one case of a guy. I've had several. I've ran into people that I have served in there. They did their time and got out, and they see me on the street and walk up and shake my hand and said, hey, you said something to me 10 years ago, and I still live up to it to this day. And I actually had this one guy who didn't know how to get his life together. So every day when he came in, he was on drugs. He was in there for a drug charge, robbery, where he broke in somebody's house. He told me his whole story. And I just said, hey, and he was an older gentleman. This gentleman was just about ready. He was in his late 40s getting ready to turn 50. But he had lived a life of drugs and crime and going to jail. And he just said, it's time for me to do something different. So I asked him what he wanted to do. He told me he wanted to work at this hospital. And I told him how to get there, how to sell itself, how to go to an interview and all that. And we practiced this stuff every day when he came in, even if it was for 10 or 15 minutes of my day, of my eight-hour shift. I said I could give him that little bit of time. So the gentleman got out of jail, and he wrote down everything that I was telling him to do, and that became his life book. If you want to say it, and he did those things. And when he got out, I got a phone call one day, and it was him. I got an outside call, and it was unusual. When he called me, said, "Hey man, I just called to let you know, I've been out for 2 years. I've been sober. I got my girl back." He said, "I got a car. I got a place to stay, and I finally got the job that I wanted when I talked to you about it." And I congratulated him. He said, "I just want to thank you, giving me something positive to go on," and I grabbed a hold of it, and I never had it in my life before, and I just want to thank you for it. So it made me feel good, but it's plenty of other cases of people that just need that direction, that point in their life where they got to veer off the wrong road and get on the right one. And they can do it.
Right.
They just sometimes need direction, even if it's just pointing them, even if it's just saying to them, hey, this is what you need to think about every day. Here's 10 things you need to think about and keep it moving. I've done that.
Well, see,
I've given
it. Right. It sounds like you guys are talking about life, the basic life skills that we all probably got at some time during our teen years that you guys are trying to instill in grown men once they get into an institution. I mean, is that,
that
am I correct with that?
Yes,
yes,
most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
But to some of them, it's like pounding a piece of paper into a brick wall. But those are the ones that are so hard-headed and stubborn, and they are – I ain't gonna say blinded. They're so set in their ways, they're not gonna change whatsoever. You know what I mean? So to some degree, you gotta look at it and say, hey, am I wasting my time, or am I just gonna give you something, whether you take it or not? I feel like I gave you something. Is what you could do with it is your choice. So
right, Cliff, you got a question?
Yeah, no, my question, I wanted to jump in, I wanted to say, so, you know, one of these things, we got young people, because, you know, we wanted to kind of target the show towards young people, even though it speaks to everyone that, you know, potentially may find themselves in a incarcerated setting. If you guys could, just for a second, right, just kind of give folks who don't understand what I know no 2 days, there's no typical day, I know that.
Mm.
But what might a day inside look like for somebody who has no knowledge, no understanding of what a day of incarceration looks like? Could y'all just kind of describe that just for a couple minutes?
Well, I'll go with it. Pretty much 6 o'clock in the morning. You up, the lights on, your cell gets unlocked. Then also we have a rec call early in the morning, 5-minute rec call. It's one of those ones where we do movement, and it's a controlled movement. Now, if you ain't up in that 5 minutes, and the time they lock the doors, you're hit. You're in the unit. And then after that, pretty much that's when we usually start our breakfast. Our breakfast starts in the morning around about 6:30. You've probably got about 45 minutes. After that 45 minutes, you it. That's it. Around about 7:30, work call. If you have a job, you gotta be to your job. You don't be to your job, after they do their roll call on your job site, you pretty much get written up. And pretty much a lot of the guys do have jobs. Some of them don't have a job. If you don't have a job, it's not like you can go to bed and sleep all day. No, your bed must be made up, and you have to be doing something. You can't be laying in your bed. And, you know, it's a lot of stuff we still have to work on, I think, in my mind, but it's a start. And we have a lot of programs, but we also know, too, a lot of programs are getting cut because of the funding.
Mm-hmm.
But you're
right.
Pretty much going to have to use the resources that you do have. And one of my biggest things that I see a lot, that which I don't like, I mean, we leave our TVs on all day. My thing is, why can't some of these guys go to the library or take something educational and, you know, better yourself? And
right.
I think we do a big disjustice when we want to leave different stuff on all day and let them, you know, watch the TV. Now, we know they're going to get to watch the news and all of that, but I'm talking about the MTV and the talk shows and all of that. That's not helping their incarceration.
Right.
And try to better themselves.
Right.
And pretty much about 4 o'clock, well, about 3:30, a lot of them pretty much is back in the housing units. At 4 o'clock, we have count. And everybody has to be accounted for that. And pretty much after the count, you have your dinner hour. And after dinner hour, you probably got about 2 hours, maybe 2 hours and a half, about 8:30, everybody's back in the unit. And I will say about 9:15, everybody is locked in for the night.
Wow.
And it's pretty pretty much your whole day, 24 hours, is calculated.
Calculated. 100%.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I thank y'all for illustrating that because, you know, I think when I talk to young people, you know, I see lots of people, you know, when you're African-American, unfortunately, and we discussed this earlier in the show, but unfortunately when you're African-American, the chances that you know someone that is either incarcerated or that has been incarcerated is very high. So as we talk to young people, you know, I talk to and mentor some, and you have some who don't have male figures in their lives, and you have some who have transient figures, and then you have some who have a revolving door of male figures who come in their life. So they never make positive relationships with male figures, but they know they've got that relative that's incarcerated, and they say things like, you know, I go to jail, it's like a reunion. I'ma see
wow.
Everybody I grew up with. It's like a reunion. I ain't afraid to go to jail. And I try to explain to them, you don't got to be afraid to go to jail. The jail waiting for you. If you invite in jail, it's just a matter of time before jail is going to take you up on your offer, if you understand what I'm saying. So,
yeah,
so
yep.
You don't have to be afraid to go to jail. But a lot of these young people have a false understanding of what jail really is. You know,
yeah.
I talk to people. Everyone is redeemable to me. To me, everyone is redeemable if they want to.
Right.
But
exactly.
I see some things, and as a criminal justice professional for many years, there are certain things that I see happen a lot in our community that I wish people would stop doing. For one, bringing children to visit incarcerated folks. It desensitizes young people to what the corrections setting is.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times those kids grow up desensitized to what that really is. This person has been extracted from the community for things that they have done. And when you bring children into those settings, those children come, they see this person, they deal the bond for the hour or hour and 15 minutes, however long the visit is, and then they go home, they get phone calls, so they periodically hear from the folk, and they get a false sense of what that person is really there for and what is really happening. And lots of times, it's a perpetual cycle. I work with some counselors who they work with a grandparent, a child, and now a grandchild, and you may have one probation officer that has been the supervisor of all three.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And the issue, one issue I have, I think, with institutions is not. It's just a critique, not a criticism. The critique is I think most employers, including corrections, they don't know what people who work for them have to offer. For example, you may have people with different skill sets that are capable of doing things in the institution that you don't give them a chance to do.
You are 100% right on that.
You know, you have people with skills who know how to work on stuff that could teach some stuff inside the institution versus just biding their day and doing life on the installment plan. You have people like Robert who said he dialogues with people that could really benefit from learning CALM and violence reduction so they can meet and talk to inmates one-on-one about those things, how to de-stress and decompress and all those things. I think we have to do a better job as administrators in law enforcement, make sure we know the people who work for us and what skill sets they bring. So instead of waiting for the government to throw more money at something, we can invest in those people to be that front line since they had most contact with inmates anyway. If
anyway,
it makes sense
yeah.
to you guys.
It makes total sense. I say that all the time. all the time. We're constantly spinning our wheels because we want to get the credit. Like the administration, they want to get the credit versus allowing someone who has built a relationship or whatever with the inmate and are able to offer them, like you said, something else, being able to take the time, as I think it was Robert, that, you know, he had a rapport and he was able to give something to that inmate. I believe in each one teach one, and I always say that.
Absolutely.
Whatever I can impart to anyone, and in particular the young inmates, because I was affected. My son was incarcerated, so I understand.
Right.
He needed someone to also be able to break down things to him. And as a
right.
mother, I'm able to deal with the young men from that perspective also. You know, I talk to them like an aunt. I say I'm just
right.
a funny aunt. You know, I would make jokes with them, but I'm able to reach them like that as well. And now
right.
if they're having a struggle that day, they'll come back, you know, and they say, you know, Miss Lisa, when you said that the other day, I didn't get it, but it made total sense. And it's food for thought, always teaching a life lesson, giving food for thought. And you
right,
have
that's what
to,
James and Robert are saying, too. They talk to them, and sometimes mm-hmm. they may not get it then, but I guarantee when they go back to their housing unit, they think about something you said.
Days later, sometimes weeks and months later. Cause I like,
and
I,
you probably
know,
forgot,
I like,
they'll come back and thank you.
Yeah, all the time. I like to make funnies. I call it funnies. But they know the serious side. There's two sides. They know the business side, and then they, you know, I like to joke, and I always tell them we can do it easier, we can do it hard. Either way, it's cool with me, but I prefer to do it easy. And it goes a long way.
Right.
It goes a long way. You know, I have people that don't like me. I say they don't like my first name, but my last name they respect because it's different. They don't want to see Miss Lisa, but
right.
they're mm-hmm. cool the other way. And that's why I tell them we can do it either way. I can be the aunt, you know, that you can say whatever you need to say, get it off your chest or whatever, you know, and we're professional also. Don't get it twisted. You know, people be like, oh, no, not friendly. But we're in my situation is different because it's job related. So you work with the same people every single day, day in and day out, just like a regular work relationship.
Exactly.
So
right.
with that being said, you know, you get to know them a little bit better than you do if you're just, you know, if they're just in the cell, they're on the unit, they're on the block, they're on the tier, they're on the pod. You may not see them because you may not work that building all the time, but I actually, you know, you actually work with them one-on-one when you're in a job setting. So that
mm-hmm.
makes a difference, and that also allows you to establish a rapport. It allows you to be able to help them out when they go to the parole board because they work underneath of you. You're able to say to the parole board, yes, this person has been an excellent worker. He's been employed for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, or whatever.
Exactly.
Never been late, never been – so all those things – are key. And whenever I hire them, I always let them know there's nowhere that you can say that you put out 2,500 meals a day. Use this as a tool.
And
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't know to say that if you didn't educate them on that. See, those are the things, and a lot of them, what you just said is powerful because think about if you've been incarcerated a long time or you're in and out of jail, you don't have any references. That's the only reference you have.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's actually
you guys have any certification
couple...
programs in there? Like if they work with you, can they get any certifications? I know you said you work in the
meals.
They can
get serve safe certified.
And stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
free.
So they're
free.
Able to do that. And actually, at one point, they were doing it for not just the inmates that worked in the kitchen. They were offering it to other inmates as well that had 6 to 12 months, and then that program did get cut. But if we're allowed to, actually the kitchen can actually certify the inmates. I know when I worked in another institution, they had to take a serve safe test and all that kind of stuff. They weren't nationally certified, but they were certified. It wouldn't take anything for them to actually get the certification.
ACA will certify that. I mean, it's nothing to get that certified that with you being, you know, a correctional officer and that's your field of job, what you do and they work for you, that's easy. And that's what I tell a lot of inmates, too. These jobs y'all do here, before you get out, get your supervisor to write you up something, you know, I'm not saying the budget or anything like that, but that goes when you go out here looking for a job.
A long way. I mean, and then you have we have like first cook, second cook, third cook. You have bakers. You have, you know, a lot of different things. You have, you know, laborers who just wash dishes, pots and pans. And I say just wash dishes, but they do a lot more than just dishwash. So I always encourage them to work hard while they're in there, not just for, you know, a couple of days so they can move up, but give them an opportunity to move up. I do 90%. Well, I did 90% of the hiring, a lot of the firing, a lot of promoting and things of that nature. When they're in there, they also, I always tell them to keep in mind, you practice how you play. If you work well here for 18 cents an hour, you're definitely going to be able to go out to get a job at McDonald's or wherever you need to go as a stepping stone to move up to the next level. You can't expect to get $10 an hour doing 15 cents an hour worth of work. So I constantly try to instill that. You got to crawl before you can walk. Use this as an opportunity because, again, they don't have life. You don't have life. So you have to prepare yourself mentally, physically, and you have to prepare yourself, you know, to build up that work history. Because some people, they're 40 years old and they've never worked before, which I find that, you know, kind of hard. But it's due to the hustle game, you know. And then
it's encouraging to hear this from you guys because, you know, when you hear people talk all the time, they always tell the horror stories of correction officers, how someone treat them. But it sounds like you three are really take time out to get those. I'm not saying it's just you three, because it'd be a whole lot more.
Right.
All we hear is the horror stories of the CO who doesn't care. You guys seem to be giving those life lessons. Yeah, you may be here now, but this is how you can use this on the outside. To me, that goes a long way simply because it's just not you them going through the motion. It's saying, look, put some effort into this thing because eventually you may want to do this on the outside, at least as a stepping stone to get you where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm glad you guys joined the show because I think that's important for people to hear that there are guys like you in there are dialoguing and saying, hey, teaching these life lessons. Being a military retiree, I can tell you, and I know two of you guys are military also, former military, that it's almost like the military when you go to basic training and everyone is on a different sheet of music. The prison is like you break the people down to build them back up. I think sometimes we forget to build them back up, but it sounds like you guys are actually trying to do that by giving them those life lessons. If they listen or not, that's one thing. But I appreciate you guys at least going the extra mile. I think Robert said, heck, I'm there anyway, so why not make it worth my while and do something positive.
Exactly. It's easy to be mad, you know, but what are you going to get out of being mad? You're not going to get anything out of it. And we got to be there anyway. So if you got to be there anyway, you might as well do it to the best of your ability. And that's not saying that we don't have challenges, because I know I have challenges some days where they just really get on my nerves. But I have to come back, you know, and I have to regroup also. And they hold me accountable
as
well, because I always let them know, you can hold me accountable. I'm not always going to be right.
Right. I'm passionate about it because, as you guys know, I have a son that I love dearly. Like most people have children. And if I don't give back and help other kids and other young people, what's to stop that kid from taking my son's life because no one took the time with them? That's why I look at it. What if my son, Lord forbid, happened to go to prison? How would I want him treated? How would I want to be treated? I know some people you have to treat differently because of the way they act, but majority of the people, if you can dialogue with them, I think we go a long way with really getting these young people back into community. And they've probably never had someone dialogue with them like you guys. Well, what do you want to do? You know how many young kids have never been asked what they want to do with their life?
You know what I tell them, too, when they say that? I said, put it on paper. Because once you have it on paper and you actually see it on paper, It begins to change your whole thought process. So I challenge them often. Write it on paper. Put a plan. Not just a verbal plan, but write that plan down.
Most of the time, your young people need that challenge. They're mm-hmm. always looking for a challenge, but they're looking for a challenge to see if they can win. If you give them a challenge where they have to do something and they have to induce knowledge and make that work for them, I found those, it's kind of like if you see a kid and you give a kid something that he can't do when they're growing up, and then it challenges their mind to do it. Well, some guys in there that are young are missing – they're missing some key elements, and you can pick right up on them. I mean, I'm a parent. I raised two boys, and thank God neither one of them went to prison. But that was the things that I gave to them. I gave to them to in order to meet the challenges that they were going to face in life. And a lot of these guys don't have it, and they use the negative side of things as a way of accomplishing something that doesn't get accomplished. I know that don't sound right, but a lot of things in prison is not right. You have to be able to filter how they see life and how we see life. And I tell people all the time, I said, you know, I take a slow walk going into work because I leave my life behind to come mm-hmm. in here to deal with this, and I do the same thing going because I don't bring work home with me, and I don't
right.
take my personal life to work with me. So that slow walk, especially if the weather's nice, is to drop it all off and leave it where it is. But I think that the key, and Ren, I'm with you on this about the young people. I mean, that's the key to our future. You know what I'm saying? The key to everybody's future is the next generation, because they're going to be the ones grabbing hold of the wheel and driving the bus. So you want to make sure that they are capable of doing it, willing to do it, and going to do it in a manner that somebody else is going to look at it, marvel at it, and say, hey, I want to do that. I want to be that. And I challenge them all the time to be inspiration to each other. Like, mm-hmm. I had these two I don't want to monopolize time, but I had these two guys that were great basketball players, and I picked up that they played organized ball. So they wasn't street ballers. And I said to both of them, did you play organized ball? And he was like, yeah, I played for this team. And I was like, well, what? I ain't going to ask you what happened that got you here, but you're here. So they would never play together. And when they played against each other, they played in a manner that as if they were rivals, and they wanted to – that this was their way of fighting. And, I mean, they played with anger against each other. So I said to both of them on separate occasions, I said – when you're playing on a competitive level, you always play to marvel so that other people can marvel your game. It's just a game. I said, go out there, play the game, do the best you can, and then let them marvel at how good you are. You don't have to speak your game. Let your game speak for you. I told both of those guys the same thing, and it changed their whole persona about how they go to rec just to play ball. When they go to play ball now, they just go out there, do the thing, and let somebody – he said, you know what? You were right about that. I don't even talk trash about my game no more. I just go out there and do it. I said, that's all you got to do, because people on the sidelines looking at you and marveling at what you do. So I said, sometimes we got to pick what they can do and communicate with them on a level that they understand, and they'll get more out of it than what you tell them at
right.
that point. It's a nucleus of things that are built around what you tell them. So sometimes you have to be careful about – I ain't going to say use the word careful, because you can tell them anything. But you want to give them something that they can build on. And that helped those two young men, because they were great athletes. They had mannerism, and they
right.
just did something to mm-hmm. get them in the place that
hey,
they are.
Great show, guys. But I hear the rap music coming on. I wish we could go on and on. I really do, and I really appreciate you guys for calling in. It's really important. Listening family, Cliff and I promised you these shows. We did. This is part two, part three. We're planning a community town hall event sometime this year, well, next year in February or sometime. Stay posted, because we're really going to talk about solutions. Solutions to the school-to-prison pipeline. Solutions to criminal justice reform and reentry. We need everyone's support. Thank you. As our co-host Tracy says, you want to hit him with it, Cliff?
But hold on, before we hit him with that, we got three new people here. Once y'all come on the show, you're officially family. So now we got Cousin Lisa, we got Cousin Robert, and we got Cousin James. All right? Now that y'all cousins, we got to know what y'all bringing to the cookout. We will start with you, Lisa. Ladies first. What you bringing to the cookout?
Oh, I see. I bring some macaroni and cheese. How about that?
That's what I'm talking about, Lisa. You my new best friend.
How about that?
How about that?
I don't know, Ren. You work out too much, Ren. You might not want my fattening macaroni and
cheese. That's why I work out hard. I want that. What about you, Robert?
I'm bringing the pretzel salad.
All right.
Okay. All right. What do you deserve?
Dessert table popping.
James.
I'm bringing the fried red potatoes with onions.
Come hungry.
Also cooked on the grill.
You know we had people tell us they're going to bring forks one time, right?
Exactly.
Well, you need them too.
What we don't use back.
Right.
And the guy said what we don't use, he going to take back.
He want to take home with
man.
Him.
So look.
It's been a great show, family.
Co-host, absolutely. And our lovely co-host, Tracy, she says it all the time. Y'all could have been anywhere in the world, but y'all chose to be here with us. And for that, we thank y'all. Good night, listening family.
Thank you, family. We love you. Peace.
All right. Peace out.
All right.